You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
What, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Well, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Did you feel it?
A vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Laugh hard.
Run fast. Be kind.
Doctor, I let you go.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks. We are continuing with our Summer of Song, and we are going to be looking, continuing in the 11th Doctor era, and we are looking, of course, at The Impossible Astronaut and Day of the Moon, and which started off season 6 of Doctor Who. And it was actually really interesting to see the Doctor make a big splash in like the first, 10 minutes of the episode, and sets up the mystery of the season. And it's just a lot of fun. And we've got a great crew to talk all about that. Of course, let's welcome first Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, sir?
Yeah, I really felt like I was going back in time with this one. I was like, I mean, it hasn't been a decade, but man, it's getting there. It's amazing how much this time flies and how like much space was between this one and since I last saw it. So,
Well, it's interesting because we did review this back on Earth Station One when we were doing Doctor Who back then.
Yeah, I have no memory of anything I said in that, so I could completely negate everything that I said when we originally reviewed it, or I could spout verbatim everything that I said. I have no idea.
I'll actually just play these episodes taped back to back or something. You know, and we have basically the night off. We're just going to play the Earth Station One episode.
It would be kind of curious to listen to that and go like, what was I thinking then? Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So it's actually pretty cool. Of course, we're joined by the lovely and beautiful Mary Ogle.
Hi, everyone. It is great to be here.
Great to do some Doctor Who talk in the middle of summer. Can you believe it's almost August already?
No, I can't believe how close to Dragon Con it is.
Oh, I know. Do you know it's 30 days from today?
Ooh.
It is Dragon Con. So it's ticking, ticking.
I'm just going to be off in the corner of the station whimpering. So that's how I'm going to spend the rest of the episode. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. And and speaking of Dragon Con, if you want, the newest episode of the Dragon Con Report is now available. So definitely, and Mike actually gets some directors together and brings them to talk all about the con. And, it's actually neat to do a roundtable that way. You did a great job, sir.
It was awesome. Thank you. It was a very fun experience to talk to so many people behind the scene that would do the behind the scenes stuff with Dragon Con. So that was nice.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Find the ins and outs and actually even talk to a newbie track director. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So very awesome. So you can find the Dragon Con report here on the ESO Network. And we are joined by a brand new guest this week. Let's welcome, of course, Brooke to the show.
Hi.
How are you, Brooke?
I'm good.
Welcome to the station.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Do you want to tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Where should I start?
Oh, okay.
Doctor Who stuff.
That's always a good point. That is always a great start.
Well, my friend Rachel, I guess recommended me to do this podcast with you guys because she hasn't really been podcasting since theirs was over. And she didn't know it, but these particular two episodes are the first two full episodes I ever watched of Doctor Who.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And I didn't even watch them the first time they aired. I watched them with the other two from that season. The first four, they aired them the day after The Doctor's Wife came out. They aired them on Sunday, right in a row. And I was like, I've tried to watch this show before, but I kept catching it in the middle. And I thought, well, I'll just start here because there's a few in a row. And then if I like it, I'll keep watching it. And immediately after I got done watching The Doctor's Wife, I went to Netflix to find everything else that I could. So that's how I
did. Wow. How far back did you go?
I've watched everything I possibly can by now. At the time, there wasn't much streaming of the classic Who, but I also did it backwards with the new series. So I watched series 5 and then 4 and then 3 and 2 and 1 and then went back to as far back as I could go with the classic Who and came forward. So it was timey-wimey in the spirit of things. But also...
That is awesome.
Yeah. Also, the first time I dressed up as anybody from Doctor Who, it was River Song wearing the denim outfit from this show. And it was for a Halloween costume that same Halloween. So, yeah. So she didn't realize it when she recommended me, but these two episodes are very important in my Doctor Who life.
Yeah. One question that we like to ask, and I think, well, I'm not going to assume, who's your doctor? Do you consider Matt your doctor, or?
Yes. But it's weird. It's not like, oh, he's my most favorite doctor, but he is my doctor, if that makes sense. Because.
He's your first?
Yeah, but I love so many of them. But so, like, I'd say he's probably second because I love Patrick Troughton and Peter Capaldi equally, and they're probably first.
Wow. You're awesome. That's cool. Now, Brooke, that is very cool. And you do a podcast also.
Yes, yes. Me and actually Skip, who's also friends with Rachel, wanted to do this podcast. She told me to talk to him, and he wanted to do it over the Eighth Doctor Adventures because every other Doctor Who book podcast kind of stopped about there. Nobody had done them. And then we found a kid in New York City named Alex who's doing it with us. And it's a lot of fun. And I actually got to meet Alex when I went to New York the last time. That was a lot of fun. But we have done 7 of them because we're doing them monthly. And they're released on the last day of the month. So our July episode was actually released today that we're recording. It's pretty exciting. We give them a rating out of 8 because... Eighth Doctor.
That is awesome.
Oh, and it's called Fiction Paradox. I should probably tell people that.
Mm-hmm. And how could people find them?
We are on, we're on iTunes and we're on, I think, Google Play. I can't remember if we're on anything else or not because that is up to Skip. He does that. But we have a Facebook page and a Twitter, and it's Fiction Paradox. If you don't know anything about the Eighth Doctor Adventures, there's a group called the Faction Paradox. So that's where we got our name from.
That is awesome. Well, welcome aboard, and it's going to be great talking to you throughout this episode tonight.
Yeah.
And, of course, we want to hear from you guys at home. You know, of course, you can write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And just, you know, let us know what you think about these storylines, or if you have a question about Brooke and her podcast, or, you know, questions about anything that happened at San Diego Comic-Con, you know, hey, we're always here to answer that. You know, Mike is sitting here 24 hours a day waiting for emails. So it's a good, yep, exactly.
Just waiting.
Of course. Do you not let him answer the phone?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
That gets scary. we have restraining orders from him for because of stuff like that. So that's a whole nother story. Let's get started with this week's Doctor Who news. And basically, we're still coming off of everything that happened at San Diego Comic-Con. Luckily, last time we talked to you, we were able to review the coming soon trailer, teaser, whatever you want to call it. You know, the look, at least it was more than the pizza delivery thing they showed us a couple days before that. And so it was neat. San Diego was a great experience for Doctor Who. And, you know, I mostly think it's because of the Doctor herself. She was everywhere at San Diego. Anywhere you looked, including the fashion show, she showed up.
Yeah, that was awesome. She went down the runway.
It was really cool because she had the hood on and she takes it off.
Yes.
Everyone's like,
oh my gosh.
Oh my God, it's her.
It's really her.
And it was just great. And she was greeting fans. And she's making a fantastic first impression. I will, you know, and I think this is what she needed to do.
She was having a lot of fun, too.
Oh, very much so. Really... No, it was great. And it was neat to see her with her, you know, two of her companions. And it was just, they were all over the place. And I loved seeing the bust of her that they did in all in Lego, her whole body, basically.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
Do you know how long that must have taken?
Yeah, there's a making of video for it, and people should seek it out because it's pretty fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't even see, like, instructions when they were doing that. So it's just, they're just putting them together and gluing it. And I thought, how do they remember where the pieces go?
Right.
I would hope they would have done a test model first.
Well, I'm sure they did, but I just didn't see, you know, any sort of schematic so that they didn't accidentally mess it up.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, Jodie was awesome, and she was a great sport about everything. Loved seeing the picture of her with Alex Kingston.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And it was like, if only...
Though there is a bit of controversy around that because they changed the caption mm-hmm. when they released it.
Did they?
Which, yes. The first caption was, it was something like the doctor and her wife.
Yeah.
And then they changed it to, I forgot what it was.
Their actual names.
Yeah, Jodie meets Alex, the doctor's wife, or something like mm-hmm. that. Implying that she was no longer the doctor's wife. Yeah, it was not a good move.
No, that was a horrible move. Mm. Yep, and it's, you know, they're still putting out, you know, shots here and there of some of the filming that they're doing in Cardiff, I guess, for the final episode of the season. And also, I guess they're getting ready in the next couple weeks to do the Christmas episode already. So I guess we won't get a surprise of Jodie at Dragon Con, sadly enough.
yeah, probably not. But I'd rather she be making episodes. So
Dragon Con is pretty stacked as it is this year, it seems.
Yeah, that's true.
I've got to be to work. I have to be at a work thing. And I just found out that we get to leave on Saturday morning when I thought we weren't going to leave till Sunday morning. And I told my coworker, I was like, because we have to drive. And I was going to say, I can just fly to Atlanta from Cleveland and you can drive the car home, right? She goes, I don't care. So I might make an appearance after all, but probably not.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. The guests for Doctor Who guests, Dragon Con has actually stacked a deck this year, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, between Peter Capaldi and, of course, Bill is going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Pearl Mackey.
Pearl Mackey's awesome. And mm-hmm. then you also have, they've announced that Catherine Tate is going to be coming to Dragon Con for the first
time. Yeah, that's cool.
And that's pretty darn awesome. Fun. And, of course, Karen's going to be there, too. So you got to get Karen.
Karen comes back.
Well, I wonder if she's going to be doing both Marvel panels and also, you know, because I don't think there's really going to be a Jumanji panel, so.
You never know, but I'm sure she, you know, she'll have all of that covered. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'm sure when you go to pick out the picture that you want her to sign, mm-hmm. I'm sure she's got plenty of everything. So.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
A table full.
Exactly. And like we said in the Dragon Con report, do not ask her anything about the new movie. Come on, folks. She might have to snap her fingers. I don't know. So it's interesting, and I'm impressed because Barrowman's going to be there also. So
mm-hmm. yep.
You never right. know where he could pop up too.
Yeah, all right. That's true.
Let me rephrase the word pop up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. And whether or not he's wearing pants.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, pop-up might have not been the right word for Barrowman. So,
or it might exactly have been the right.
Yeah. Actually, I think it's pretty accurate.
I wouldn't be surprised if we get one or two more guests to Dragon Con who have been on Doctor Who, mm-hmm. from what some rumors I'm hearing. But I don't want to say anything, so, because they're starting to make a lot of like CW announcements and such, and a certain member of Legends might be coming to Dragon Con, I hear. Mm-hmm. So, or you could call him Mr. Pond, but you know, whatever. But I'm not saying anything, so it should be very interesting. So it's really neat for that. Dragon Con's shaping up pretty awesome. I know we are going to be doing a Earth Station Who live at Dragon Con. We don't
yeah,
have.
We are.
We are going to be talking all about the 12th Doctor's era at Dragon Con this year. And it's kind of impressive that the 12th Doctor is going to be there. Mm. You know, God, I hope he's yeah. not in the audience listening to us and going, wrong, wrong, wrong.
Please don't heckle
that's,
us.
Yes. That's how I felt at Galley, because I was on a Stephen Moffat panel and he was there, and I'm like, oh, I don't necessarily want him to show up while we're talking about him, even whether we're talking good or bad about him. But, you know, it's,
oh, yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Exactly. And that's going to be, you know, that's part of the fun. At Dragon Con, you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
And it's going to, you know, the BritTrax folks have been always kind to Earth Station Who, and we are so looking forward to being part of that again. So once the schedule gets a little more finalized, we'll give you exact dates and room numbers and such. So it should be a lot of fun to do that. All right. Otherwise, there is very little other Doctor Who news other than news today that actually came out that Stephen Moffat has his next project.
Yes, he's going to adapt The Time Traveler's Wife as a series for HBO, which he's kind of already previewed.
Yeah, I was going to say he did that on two seasons of Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's funny. It's very timely of him to have that announcement come out today as we're recording our podcast about Impossible Astronaut and Day of the Moon. But if anybody's going to write The Time Traveler's Wife, it should probably be Stephen Moffat, because he's got timey-wimey down.
Oh, does he ever. I think it's pretty awesome that, you know, he's got another project. I watched the movie with Judy years ago when it first came out.
Oh, no, you poor thing.
Yeah, she read the book, so she wanted to see the movie.
Oh, the book is awesome.
Oh, the book is supposed to be awesome. And yeah, eventually...
The movie...
Not so much.
Not so much.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's in good hands, though, with Stephen. You know, all you Moffat haters out there, hush, so quiet. We're not hearing anything. But I think it should be a lot of fun. I think, you know, I'm willing to watch the first episode or two, see how it goes.
Yeah, I don't think there's a series that he's done that I haven't enjoyed. So I've been with him since Coupling, you know. I'll give this a try, even though the subject matter is not one that I'm like super excited by, you know, but, mm-hmm. But I will say, I think more than any other showrunner and heck creator that's worked on Doctor Who, I mean, he loves to play around with time travel. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that even if you read the book, seen the movie, what have you, if you think you know what's going to happen, you probably don't.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, like you said, we've been with Moffat for various projects. Heck, the very first episode of Earth Station One was a review of Jekyll. So, mm-hmm. So how's that for Moffat being tied into Earth Station One? So, you know, the ESO network is based off of Moffat. I don't know what that says about us, but, you know.
EMO.
So, exactly.
Emo.
Emo. God, that's awesome. I like that. We're the Emo Network.
Network.
Oh, gosh.
And so, yeah, it should be fun. And Moffat is always, you know, he's smart and he thinks through his things. Sometimes he doesn't play the long game properly and give us a finish we want. But mm-hmm. a lot of times, you know, he gets so dug into the mythos and so much into his things, he just has too much and has to almost like finish it off verbally or something. Someone just mentions mm-hmm. his, and you know, we're looking at you, the end of Matt Smith era. Yes, right.
Yeah. Well, since this is an adaptation, that may not be as big of a problem as it is for some of his more original stuff. But we'll see. I mean, I think he was a good pick for this. I mean, it's very much about a relationship lived out of order, which is what he explored with the River and the Doctor. So, you know, I'm definitely want to see what he does with it.
Was this a one and done book, or is it a series?
The book was just one book.
Okay. I didn't know if it was The Time Traveler's Wife and The Great Adventure and then The Time Traveler's Wife in the 25th century or something.
But you're going to say, like, The Time Traveler's Dog, like, that this.
So now I really hope she writes The Time Traveler's Dog.
That could work. Of course, that would be the perfect spot for a canine noise. Affirmative. Okay. I think we're getting too goofy here. Never get too goofy, folks. Don't ever think of that. Never get too goofy in life. And Mikey, you got something for us, too.
Yeah, I just want to let people know, if they haven't already checked out a convention that's near and dear to our hearts, of course, is Con Castabrus. And every year, they try to get some support, some early support, so that they can get some funding to get some great guests and secure hotels and do all the things that conventions need to do. So they have created an Indiegogo campaign. It is live now. I believe as of this, it's only really got a little under a month left. And so you can get, for your support, you can get weekend passes. You can get VIP passes. You can secure yourself at really good rates to get a VIP pass. In fact, you can get two VIP passes for 2 years for $550, which actually sounds like, on the one hand, you're like, $550, that's a lot of money. But, I mean, under normal rates, that would be $800. So it's quite, like, if you know you're going anyway, not a bad way to secure that and to help out the convention early on, so that they can secure, like I said, guests and other, you know, con related expenses early on, because this convention, as good as it is, like all small fan run conventions are, you know, they're hit or miss. I mean, we don't know if we never know year after year if it's going to be coming back. You hope they do. And sometimes they plan to, but sometimes just a simple, like, one guest canceling announcement could really make a difference as far as whether or not that convention can stand the test of time. I mean, look at what we're experiencing with Hulanta, right? So so if you love Con Castabrus, if you're thinking about going and supporting them, check out the Indiegogo campaign. Get that one. It's one thing that you can get rid of, like, that you have to do. You can get rid of it right now. Just do it. Subscribe to it. And you don't have to worry about your passes for the next, you know, maybe a couple years.
When is it? I've seen it pop up, but I've never been.
Con Castabrus this year is, or 2019 is June 8th and 9th.
Okay.
It is a Saturday and Sunday show. Although if you do arrive on Friday, if you take that extra day to go to Huntsville, you can, I believe, get a package that'll let you tour the Rocket Science Museum, which is really awesome. And you can do that with like the Con K crew, like some other VIPs as well as guests and everything like that. So they make a day of it. So I don't know if that's included in the VIP pass. You'll have to learn exactly, like, you'll have to go to the campaign mm-hmm. and find out exactly what that entails. But so it's a 2-day show, it's a great show. I mean, Mike and I have been doing it for, good, is it 5 years now?
Mm-hmm. This will be our fifth coming up. It's pretty amazing that we've been there that long, but I think, mm-hmm. you know, Kirby's been there even longer.
I think it's Bonnie, Matthew, Lori, and I'm blanking on the other chair. So apologies for that. But they just do a great job. It's a great show with a great vibe, and I want to see it continue as well. So, yeah, we'll have a link to the Indiegogo campaign on our show notes. So just click it, find out more information, and help support this great con.
Awesome, man. Yeah, it's a great con. I'm already looking forward to next year, new hotel, some favorite guests who we've talked to a couple times, and looking forward to who else they get, because you know there's going to be more coming.
And yeah, they've already announced for next year, they've already announced Colin Baker is mm-hmm. going to be there.
Exactly.
He's going to be back. Of course, our good friend Kelly Yates. Can't wait to talk to him about his encounter with Jody at San mm-hmm. Diego. And Ellie Collins, the author, she will be there as well. So those are just the three names that they've got so far.
Mm-hmm. It should be awesome. They usually get at least two or sometimes three big guests. Hmm. And not that Colin's not big. Sorry, no jokes there. But, you know, but Colin will be there. And Colin is just the most personable person out there. He is awesome. So
he's made fun of me a couple times.
Oh, yeah. Colin usually raids our candy drawer when we go there. So it's always yeah. good. You know, he walks by, oh, do you mind if I have some of your sweets? And he grabs a handful. It's like, okay, I'm not going to say no to a doctor. Come on.
Right.
So no,
he teased me once because I was eating ice cream. I was waiting behind somebody in line to get his autograph, and I was eating an ice cream cone, and I tried to eat the last bit of it real fast before that person got done. And so then he was teasing me about having a mouthful and all that stuff. And we were just laughing because, you know, it was just silly. I always liked him whenever I've seen him at things. He's always nice. And people are afraid, I guess, he's not nice if they've never met him.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately his doctor, you know, at least on TV, was gruff and, not fun. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a lot of people do kind of get that impression from him. And, yeah, he's a great ambassador to the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Exactly. So, definitely, you know, did you guys go to San Diego at home? Did you happen to run into Jody somewhere at the con? If you did, please write us, ESWpodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment, and we're going to be talking all about the Impossible Astronaut. Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network, Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
We're in the middle of the most powerful city in the most powerful country on Earth. Let's take it slow.
It's all right. I'm sending my best people.
Help me! My life in your hands.
Welcome back. We're going back to April 2011 to talk all about the Impossible Astronaut and the second part of Day of the Moon. It was interesting. This is the first storyline of the sixth series of Doctor Who. And right off from the very start, it starts with a huge bang, literally. And you have your first oh my God moment of the season, actually 10 minutes of the show. And it's just interesting to see this one. And it's been a while since we've seen it and just sat down and watched it. You know, we've played it, you know, at cons and stuff on our computer while we're sitting at our table, and you glance over it and, you know, oh, I remember that scene. Oh, I remember that scene. But then just sitting down and actually watching it, you realize how much fun this is. And the interaction between River and Matt's doctor is just amazing. And it's fun. And like, you know, Brooke was saying, this was her first story that she watched. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what drew you to this? Why did you decide to start watching Doctor Who with this?
Well, I had a lot of friends who liked Doctor Who. Well, at the time, a lot would be two. Because, you know, it was starting to get more popular, you know,
Sure.
The new series was starting to get more popular in the United States, and I didn't really know a lot of people who had watched the classic series at the time, which I have tons of friends now that I've made through the internet because of that. But I thought, well, it's on. It looks like there's a marathon. I'll watch that. And it was exciting because it had like Apollo astronauts stuff in it, you know, like the space race and all that in it. And I had wanted to be an astronaut when I was a kid. So it's like, okay, I'll watch this. And then it was a two-parter. And then I thought, well, I got to watch the next half. And then I thought, well, I'll just watch the next one. And I ended up watching all four that they aired together.
Oh, that's awesome though.
So yeah.
Did it make sense, you know, to you seeing that the doctor got killed right off the very beginning of the show?
I knew that it was kind of all over the place with timelines and things, so I just went with it.
Okay. That's very cool.
Like I said, I watched them backwards after that.
Well, that's appropriate.
Totally. Yeah. Well, yeah. So you watch them in river order.
Yeah, well, she dresses as River, so she wanted to do it that way. That makes total sense.
And I had, you know, I hadn't at the time, you know, dressed as River, and then I did for, like I said, for Halloween, and then my 30th birthday also ties into this because I wore the Storm Cage, like, uniform dress thing that she wears, and my now ex-husband was the 11th doctor, but it was fun, and the invitations looked like the invitations the doctor sent out to everybody with the coordinates on the front, except for mine opened up so that you actually knew what it meant. But I had TARDIS blue envelopes, and I bought vintage stamps so I could fill up the envelope with stamps when I mailed them.
That's awesome.
That's cool. That is really cool.
That's a great idea for a party to do something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like the next year because it was too, yeah.
Well, it'd be interesting because you'd have to see, you know, put coordinates to your party and then see if people are smart enough to figure out their coordinates.
Well, some of them weren't smart enough to open the card because they would send me messages and they're like, is this like supposed to be where your house is? And I said, yes, you can open the card. And they went, oh.
That is awesome.
No, I'm not saying my friends are dumb. I think I cut the cards out too neatly, and they were nice and flat, you know.
They didn't want to destroy them. They didn't want to destroy all the work that you put into it.
That's so sweet of them.
Yeah.
That is awesome. But we're kind of digressing right here.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. So episode, yeah, that's it. Doctor Who, yeah, the astronaut.
It is a great, I love the fact that it just starts as a murder mystery, you know. And I mean, where our main character is murdered, and so now we find out like what the heck's going on, and and I really do love the companionship, the interplay between Amy, Rory, River, and the 11th Doctor. I mean. We talk sometimes about how sometimes the TARDIS can get too crowded. Mm-hmm. With those four, it just, you know, we talked about it in the last one that we reviewed, but they get better. I mean, this is the next adventure after the Weeping Angels one, and Rory wasn't part of that one.
No. This is the one after Pandorica.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So he's already met River.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why does he act like he hasn't met River here?
He doesn't act like he hasn't met River.
No, he's Rory.
Yeah.
He's Rory.
He just something.
Still doesn't know who she is, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody. Something that I thought, oh, he doesn't know her that well.
No.
But,
nobody does. Nobody knows her that well. This is before they revealed who she was.
Well, no, I know that. And this is
even
where we
11
see.
Asked her who she is in this one, because I watched it again last night so that I
could... that's true. He basically says, I don't trust you yet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right, right.
And that's
a pretty bold kills statement. And all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few moments that he kind of, you know, inadvertently really hurts her, you know, like because of the way that their timelines are going. And, That's one where he's like, I don't trust you yet. And she, you know, obviously affected that way. But I do think that, and, you know, it's sort of, I kind of wish that we had maybe watched Let's Kill Hitler like after this, rewatched it, because that was fresh on my mind. And I had to kind of dial back and go, okay, they don't know this yet. They don't know this yet. They don't know you this yet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like they don't know so much about her. She's a complete mystery. And, you know, that's why they've had to, in this episode, they emphasized, you know, meeting up with the diaries, where they are in each other's right. timelines. Because yep. when you see the doctor at the beginning, he's done all those adventures with River, like, you know, Jim the Fish and Easter Island, mm-hmm. you know, all those different ones. And, you know, but then, you know, after the doctor dies and then the younger doctor shows up, he's like, who's Jim the Fish, you know, or, you know, all that. And, you know, he hasn't experienced anything like that. At the beginning, you're experiencing a doctor who's over almost 150 years older.
Mm. Yep. I think right. they said 200 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. It's just interesting to see, you know, cause you see all these adventures the doctor's having at the very beginning of the episode. You know, including the Tower of London and, you know, World War II and, you know, and it's just some really neat things. And then him with Laurel and Hardy, you know, it's just mm-hmm. awesome.
Right. That was really well done, the way that they did that opening, I thought. But yeah, this is one of those episodes, or both of these episodes, where it's very, very different on a rewatch after you've seen the whole season play out. And I kept trying to put myself back in the mindset of, okay, I don't know anything, but it's impossible to do mm-hmm. because, but it's still enjoyable. In fact, it's almost more enjoyable, or at least enjoyable in a different way, because like that scene where they're in the tunnel and River is speaking to Rory about her relationship with the doctor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's such great a lovely scene. Right. And heartbreaking performance by Alex Kingston. And then you don't know it at the time, but now when we watch it, you know, we know that Rory is her father, and that makes it even more poignant on a whole different level.
Well, and I like how the doctor sends Rory to go off with her whenever she goes back. And it's like, he doesn't know that he's her dad, and it's like he's taking care of her like he would be her dad, but he doesn't know that. And it's there's so much foreshadowing in this mm-hmm. that we don't even know until we go back and watch it. And I just love how it's all sort of intertwined. Like, I mean, sometimes, like you said before, Moffat doesn't always get the long game necessarily right, because he tries to put too much and has to hurry up at the end. But sometimes some of these things, they come back in the very end and you go, was he thinking about that the whole time? Did he always have that plan?
Just how does story work on? And it's, yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it was probably a happy accident, but sometimes he probably mm-hmm. planned it out. And it's just fascinating to go back and watch and see it in a whole new way.
When we just talked about Time of Angels, I remember, you know, I brought it up, you know, Amy and River are meeting for the quote unquote first time. And even though I'm not convinced at that point that Stephen knew that they were mother and daughter, it still works. I'm still impressed by the fact that when you watch it, knowing that information, it's like, whoa, it feels like a big meeting. And I do think certainly by this time, by Impossible Astronaut, he knows. I mean, he definitely knows now, and he's laid all of that out there for us to. Because I do remember at the time guessing, and it seems, I don't know, this time, I would like to go back and see what my thought originally, because it seems like this time watching it, it's pretty obvious that girl is her daughter. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially when she's in the nursery room or her room and looking at the pictures.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, exactly. And I think I brought this up when we talked about Hitler last time, when she was in the asylum and she sees the picture of her holding the baby, and the baby's a little bit older by this point. It's not a newborn. And when did that happen? You know, in continuity. And, you know, I know it's because Doctor Who, but, you know, I'm just asking because, you know, there's, you know, all these different pictures of the little girl growing up and, you know, the picture of her and her mom, which was Amy. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, and where in the, you know, where was it that Amy got picked up by the Silence? Because, you know, at first I thought it was when the astronaut and then the Silence and the door slammed behind them. Mm-hmm. That's where they captured Amy and replaced her with the, you know, the duplicate. Mm-hmm. But if you remember, though, before that, you saw the slide open before she went into that room. Mm-hmm. So right. she was already taken by that point.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is it ever really established definitively when she was taken?
No, I don't think so. I think there's some sort of conjecture by the doctor about when she might have been taken later, I feel like. But, yeah, because she sees, you know, she thinks that she's seeing things, and she is because she's kind of bleeding through that stasis they have her in or whatever. But I felt maybe they took her sometime when they were on the run. You know, and she was, and they were making the marks on themselves because the only mm-hmm. thing she had seen was the Silence to that point, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that would make sense, actually.
Mm-hmm. That's very possible. It could have been then, or it could have even been maybe in the bathroom for the very first episode.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when with she first Joy. Runs into the exactly. Her name was Joy. Oh, let's dive in and talk about the Silence. God, those guys scared the out of me.
They are creepy as heck. I mean, there's so much psychological horror here. It's like the fear of losing your memory. I mean, this actually really resonated with me because I have a very close friend whose mom got early onset Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and we were watching her go through that kind of around that time. And then another close friend with Parkinson's related dementia. And it's just, that is, to me, that is a lot more real and a way scarier than, you know, some guy in a rubber suit because it's, you know, it's so real. It's so visceral, that fear. You know, and then the whole thing about, you know, a child being in an orphanage, you know, a child's biggest fear is probably losing their parents and being alone. And there's a lot going on here. They start out, you know, with the doctor dying, but that's so faking. It's not really scary. But, you know, then there's a lot of banter between the doctor and River, and it's kind of light in a way. But then that day of the moon, man, it gets dark.
Yeah, literally, like on all sorts of levels. Like it is a really, really dark. I do want to mention really quick that the opening of Impossible Astronaut, it's not the first time the Doctor Who's ever filmed in America, but my God, mm-hmm. like it's the first time I think in the history of the show where they can you just look around and it's just the biggest like expanse they've ever had. Like they're mm-hmm. literally the biggest set. I mean, they're out in the middle of nowhere and it just looks so epic.
And it's stunning. It's beautifully shot.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Oh, the cinematography in this in both two episodes were just awesome. You know, the scene at the lake, the scene when they first see the doctor and he's like, howdy y'all. And he was sitting on the station wagon. It was just awesome.
Yeah. Cause usually because of the effects and everything, because of the budget and everything, Doctor feels very confined, mm-hmm. you know, even, mm-hmm. even in a TARDIS that's bigger on the inside, it still feels confined. But like, this was the first time, like I can think of watching Doctor Who where it's like, they're just out in the open. I mean, it's not in just a little, mm-hmm. you know, dinged up quarry. They are just like out in the open. There's these beautiful landscapes, these epic shots from the air. Like it's just massively different than anything else I'd seen on Doctor Who before. And it works. It still works.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It was just so well done all the way around. the scenes in the White House, the scenes at Cape Canaveral. And it was just, it was awesome.
And then, you know, to go from this beautiful Western era sort of American landscape to go right into the White House. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we've seen Doctor Who inside Parliament before, but, you know, this is, it almost feels like a little taboo. Like, what is Doctor Who like in the White House? Like, is that okay?
And but it's even better when he sits at the desk and like puts his feet up on the desk and everything.
Yes. Get me maps, get me some Jemmy Dodgers and get me a Fez.
Until River reminds them that they're American, so they probably will shoot him.
Yes. Right. They're American.
Please don't shoot me.
Like, whoa. He goes back to regular 11 after that.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the president at the time is Nixon. So we have to, like, do we like Nixon as a character? I mean, he's, you know, later on we get to, you know, see Hitler. So there's that extreme. But it's like, you know, I'm like halfway through, I'm like going, yeah, Nixon's kind of cool. I'm like, wait, what am I saying?
Yeah, well, they make him more likable than, you know, they didn't make him such a weaselly little jerk than like he was. Yeah. They really kind of downplay that.
Exactly.
Not his idea to record everything.
Yeah, it was the doctor's idea. Make sure you record everything.
Like, maybe he definitely could have had 2 days in a row where he was an okay person.
That's true.
You know,
he could have. And this was sort of, you know, at the beginning.
Well, it's when two of the companions, is it River and Rory are talking or something? And she says, or somebody says, like, he wasn't all bad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's River and the doctor.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Like, he said he wasn't all bad.
And then she
called him a hippie, and he called her
that's right.
Archaeologist.
That was awesome.
Oh, the banter. And I loved, you know, when he was like going, and this is legs, this is what was Rory?
The nose.
And then Mrs. Robinson.
I hate you.
No, you don't. Yeah, the chemistry between Alex Kingston and Matt Smith is just off the charts here. They play so well off each other.
Be honest, the chemistry between Alex Kingston and anybody.
Yes, right? Between Alex Kingston and a rock, I think it would still be amazing.
Amazing.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all. And she, you know, obviously from a cosplay perspective, I mean, she doesn't wear a bad outfit. Like, every time she changes, I'm like, oh, I've seen 100 of those at conventions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from her wearing the gown, her wearing the jean jacket outfit, from her wearing the prison outfit. It's just like, boom, boom, boom. It's just like, yep.
Yeah, or the dress with the dress where she finally, like, jumps in the pool.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The only one I've not ever seen anyone cosplay is when she and Rory come out of the TARDIS with President Nixon.
Yes.
Oh, somebody should cosplay that because it would be awesome.
No, Rachel has a suit like that she wore once.
The blue one? Oh,
yes. Cool. Cool.
It's not exact. She just bought like a vintage suit and it was really great. But let me tell you, getting that wig in an updo like that is horrendous. It's a lot of hair.
No, it was a lot of fun. And of course, you know, we've got to talk about Canton.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Our friend, Mark Shepherd.
Mark. I mean, he's pretty great here, actually.
You know, right from Canton's first appearance, which is Mark's dad. So that's a nice little tie in there. It's great that it works that way. And then, you know, we like Canton almost immediately when we see him, when we first see him in the bar. And, you know, we just like him more and more later. I mean, you know, it's a shame that he never appears again, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, he was a two-parter and that's it. And people keep on asking, you know, is he ever going to come back? And you know how he answers questions. So, you know, open and forwardly. So, Yeah, it's just,
well, as he says, it's not up to him.
No, so, exactly.
But I would find, you know, he's another one that I'm amazed that hasn't done, you know, any big finish stuff yet, you know. So I imagine at some point there will be, if he doesn't star in his own adventure, he will be a guest in like maybe an episode of Diary River Song or something.
Or Torchwood or something like that. Oh, sure. God. Him and Captain Jack. Oh, my God. Because Captain Jack's around in that era, just remember.
So. Captain Jack's around every era.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He's just around.
Exactly. Just around. He's just around
for millions of years until he evolves into a nice giant head.
He's like the silence. it is cool. You know, I mean, it's kind of – sometimes I'm kind of like, well, how many aliens or races have been around on Earth before us? Because I think the count is now in the double digits as far as Doctor Who history goes. So that part of it's kind of like, oh, another race that's been around for a while. But, you know, I mean, I don't get upset about that sort of thing. It's just kind of like, wow, that's kind of weak. But and then saying, obviously, it takes a little bit of the piss out of the fact that we go to the moon, because it's like, oh, no, mankind didn't, you know, because at the beginning,
it wasn't
the doctors seemed to think that it was really, it's like, you guys were so cool. You looked at that bright like moon and said, we're going to go up there. How like he had like a good admiration for for humanity for doing that. But by the end, it's like, no, you were hypnotized to go to the moon.
Yeah, you were so manipulated.
Yeah. And that kind of takes a little bit of the piss out of it, I think.
Yeah, I could see that.
Just if you wanted to know, I thought that he showed up for a second in one of the other episodes, and it was the wedding of River Song, but I think it was probably Morgan. I don't think they did a young Canton. I think they might have, but maybe they did have young. I can't remember now, but I had to look it up, but it doesn't tell me which one it is, but it does say the wedding of River Song, and I thought that his character showed up there for a smidge.
Okay. We will look at that later, because we'll be reviewing that one.
Very, very soon.
Exactly.
Spoilers.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I loved how they used Nixon as, you know, he was almost like more in the second part than the first part. He was almost more like a fall guy in the second one.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, they're really making fun of him in the second one.
Exactly. And it was good. And I liked that. It was neat to see, you know, the doctor with a beard and, you know, them. I want to know.
That's the first?
Yeah. It was the first time you saw the doctor that way. And, you know, you've seen the doctor playing other characters with a beard, mm-hmm. but you mm-hmm. haven't seen the actual doctor with a beard.
That seems to imply then that he needs to shave. Because don't know, it was only like, what, a few months that it passed?
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I love this two-parter, it was a great experience, there were some things that I was like, Steven, that doesn't make any sense. Like, mm-hmm. like the ending between, or the time that passes between the first episode and the second episode of this, like, it's a weird place to end it and rejoin it. And when they try to explain, like, how what happened in the middle, it doesn't really gel to me.
Mm-hmm. It did not make sense. It didn't make sense why the FBI was chasing after Amy, Rory, and River. And then and then him shooting them with it.
Like, yeah. Well, I mean, I can understand he's trying to smuggle them into Area 51, and that's, I guess, the easiest way to do it is to pretend he's going to torment the doctor with their bodies. But it's just, it's very contrived.
Do the agents that he's with think he's actually killing these people?
Yes, mm-hmm. they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so. But, I mean, he's got presidential carte blanche. I wouldn't think that would be an issue.
Or is he doing it to fool the silence?
But how can you fool? Like, at that point, he doesn't have he doesn't even know they exist at that point.
I think he does. Yeah. He does know they exist.
Well, he does, but he keeps forgetting. And he's, because he doesn't meet with them in the TARDIS until after that.
True, because they go into the TARDIS after they build that room with the
Because they have to tell him, like, you've seen a billion of them. Like, when you were, like, River says, when you were chasing me, you saw a bunch of them. And he's like, oh, yeah, I guess so. Like, he,
oh,
yeah,
that's right. Still, yeah.
He's kind of out of it. He doesn't really seem to know what's going on, which implies that he's been hypnotized. But if he's been hypnotized, how did he? I don't know. It's just, like I said, I think it's a little sloppy. The other thing that's a little sloppy is the suit. The suit is cool. It's badass. Mm-hmm. It's a great visual in the beginning when the doctor gets shot, but the explanation for why the girl is wearing the suit is ridiculous.
Oh, very much so. It's completely, you know, why did they put her in the, you know, the super suit basically? Mm-hmm. And, you know, did the suit basically come alive and grab her?
Well, I think they put her in the suit to imply that, you know, she's the one that kills the doctor. But obviously that's a red herring. Mm-hmm. And I think I'd have to, you know, it'd be really interesting to watch, to listen to when we reviewed this before, because I wonder, because I kind of remember thinking that the reason that the girl dies in the alley is because of her wounds when Amy shot her.
But that was a few months later.
Yeah, I know it doesn't.
No,
but
she's starving. She dies because she's starving.
I get that now. But I think when I first watched it, I hadn't made that connection yet. And I just felt like Amy killed her daughter, but maybe, not really.
Maybe they had her in the spacesuit to sustain, you know, maybe it was giving her food and, you know, like nutrients and things.
Well, it was supposed to. But...
Unlike a real... You know, a real spacesuit.
Well, exactly. Yeah. It's interesting, but also, if you remember when she got out of the spacesuit when she was in the orphanage, she was having trouble breathing.
Right.
Was it helping her breathe or something? Because when you see it, she's like, you know,
yeah,
like that.
It's a lot we don't, like, yeah, we just don't know. I mean, so she was in this orphanage, this dingy orphanage with just one dude, like, seeing to her needs in a suit all the time. Like, it just... It's clunky.
Well, you would think she must have got out of the suit at some point because she had a room with a bed and these pictures. But yeah, I thought the suit was a kind of prison or something. But you're right. It didn't make a lot of sense. It was just visual. But they didn't really explain it.
Well, no, they didn't explain it. And also when she called Nixon, you know, the spaceman's coming to get me, you know.
Gonna eat me.
Isn't coming to eat, yeah, coming yeah. to eat me. Does that mean the suit was coming to gobble her up and put her in the suit?
Well, that's what I thought too.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was just
because she's not in control inside the suit.
No.
She works it out.
She must have control because she's calling Nixon.
Yeah, because she's so. That's just because she's so, bent that she figures out a way. Mm-hmm. To send out this signal.
It's just, like I said, very clunky. And unfortunately, like it kind of just, it didn't mar my viewing of this because I really like this two-parter a lot. And the pacing is great. And there's so much to love about it. But there's a couple of things. Those are the things that I kind of looked at and went, this is what keeps you from getting a 5 for this one. You know what I'm saying, Steven?
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And, yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions in this one. A lot of the stuff at the orphanage and, you know, there's just so many questions that are not answered even after the season's done. Hell, even after the whole Moffat era is done. Right. You know? So it's just...
Yeah, we're kind of led to believe... Okay, so this is... When she's in the alley and she regenerates, that's 1969, right?
Supposedly, but that would make... That would
You're
make
like, what?
Yeah, that would make Mel's then almost our age, or us.
Yeah, they never answer how she gets from there to America and how and why the timeline doesn't add up.
Well, exactly. I
mean, maybe, who knows? She could have regenerated again at some point during that time, grown up and regenerated again.
And
but they don't explain it.
She regenerates in the alley. It's almost like she knows, like she's been through it before. Like she's already regenerated once.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, she knows. Yeah, she definitely knows. But I mean, maybe she knows because they told her she could do that. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of the reason why they had her in the spacesuit, so she wouldn't.
Yeah, maybe so. because if she was already somehow sick in the orphanage, it wasn't like they were taking care of her. So, like, that crazy guy, you know, wasn't taking care of her all that well. So maybe that's what was keeping her going.
Mm-hmm. I will say also when this two-parter gives us another great Matt Smith, you know, he even mentions it, you know, like how you know, when he knows what to do and how to confront the bad guy, and he's all confident and he does a speech, and he's like, he is just great. Like, Matt is amazing in those mm-hmm. moments. I mean, he's amazing through the whole thing, but mm-hmm. he really rises up. I think early on, you know, when they did the Time of Angels, and we remarked how that was his first outing as the Doctor, period. And he has that moment and he owns it so well. I think the writers, particularly Stephen, was like, I got to write him like this, like almost all every two-parter, because he keeps nailing it and we want to see it.
Yeah.
And obviously it's a turn on for River.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently so.
You know, does he say? He says something that's your face. I know that face. That's your face when I'm about to do something really clever and you love it. And she's like, this is just how I look all the time. He's like, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of flirting going on.
Oh, yeah. Especially
and there's in the a battle. Kiss.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the kiss.
The first last kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this the... Oh, okay. It's not the second time or even third time that we've seen the Doctor kiss somebody, but it's at this point, it's only a handful, right?
Yep.
It's because Matt Smith hadn't really gotten the swing of things yet. Just kidding, everybody.
Touche. But yeah, and it was just heartbreaking, you know, when they kiss and he goes, it was my first time, our first time. And she realizes this is exactly what she was talking about with Rory.
Yeah. That's why the scene with Rory is even, it's a great scene in and of itself, but it's a prelude to this. Like, this moment doesn't mean near as much if we don't have that scene before.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right.
And exactly. It is so moving. I mean, like I said, it's first kiss with her. It's their first kiss as far as he's concerned. And it breaks her heart. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's an amazing moment.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so it was really amazing. There was just so many scenes in this where it's like, wow, you know, just there are wow scenes, scenes with the silence, scenes with Amy, scenes with, you know, the Doctor and River. It's just like, wow, wow, wow. You know, and this episode holds up really well.
Yeah. We did get a little bit of the triangle between Amy, Rory and the Doctor, but I like the fact that it was dismissed pretty easily. And because I was like, oh, like, as soon as Rory started being insecure and everything, I'm like, dude, you're the Roman that waited. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, dude, like, I can't believe you're still feeling this way. But I do. I think they also did it and they wanted to play up the fact that the baby might not be Rory's to give that sort of element of mystery, especially since the girl can regenerate. I don't know. I think they kind of just did that on purpose to open up that door.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So. It was great, and, you know, I just, you know, I could watch this one again and still be entertained by it really well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it does change it, though, knowing what we know now, what's coming. And, you know, knowing who River is, knowing, you know, how this whole storyline wraps up. And it's just, it's kind of, for me, it's a little like, but it's still enjoyable. Because it back then when we watched it the first time, there were so many questions we did not know. Who is River Song? Why is she, you know, known as, you know, what does she know about the Doctor? What is she, you know, the whole thing.
Who does she kill?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Who does she kill? Exactly.
And I think they did a really good job there too, because they imply that she's going to kill Rory. I think because, you know, he's going to, what is it that, what is it that they say in the Angels one that a good man, right? And so and then when she has that talk with him in the basement or whatever, you know, he kind of confronts her, like, who are you going to, you know, kill or whatever. And she's like, and she kind of just has this look like it might be him.
Oh, I thought for a while when they kept on saying it was a good man, and then they did the title, A Good Man Goes to War, and it was Rory. It was like, oh, crap, she kills Rory.
Yep.
I like, whenever I first watched it, it just sort of seemed like, you know, River's kind of not saying anything because either she doesn't know anything or she doesn't want to give anything away. Not like she knows everything and doesn't want to give it. Like, you don't. I know I didn't realize when I first watched it, obviously from not watching really any Who before, that she, like, just how she knew everything because she was there twice in, like, almost every scene, right. You know, from her perspective. So she sort of knew, you know, she had already seen what happened, how it unfolded from one direction, and then she was seeing it from another, and she could remember, and I wonder, like, how much she was told, Alex was told that she was supposed to remember, or how much she was told of how what was going on, because whenever you watch it again, having known all that, it's kind of, you sort of see it in her face, and I don't know if it's just me projecting that, or if it's just that well done.
Question, I'm not sure how much she knew at this point either, but she, you know, when looking back on it now, the way she's playing it, she plays it like she knows more. Even if she didn't know how the whole story was going to play out, she plays the character like she knows more.
Yeah.
And she does it really well.
Did they shoot this season in order? Because I know sometimes they don't. Do we know that?
I doubt it, because they almost never do.
No, they never do put them in order, but, you know.
That's, yeah, I don't know. Not... I think it had to depend on when they got to go to America to shoot the location stuff. So I think that was, yeah, I'm not sure. It wouldn't be surprising if they had to do it out of order just because of that those sequences out in America.
Yeah. So I feel like she would have had to have known a lot to begin with. So she'd know where to start from depending on what they were filming. I mean, granted, they would have known stuff by the time, you know, if the first thing they shot was, let's kill Hitler or something, they would have known everything that was going on.
Well, I think, you know, Moffat had pulled Alex aside at one point and, you know, then said, hey, let's sit down. Let me tell you what my plans for this character. And so there were parts that she knew, but she was sworn to secrecy. So,
yeah, I know there were things she knew that the other members of the cast did not, at least at certain points.
Yes.
And they tried to bribe it out of her. But she did not give up.
Because you have to forgive me, but I can't remember. Do we see River find out, or does she just know who her parents are?
Oh, yeah, she just knows.
She knows.
Yeah, because, she just
because
knows.
We see when Amy and Rory find out.
Yeah.
But I don't think we ever see when River finds out who her mother and father are.
No.
Well, she knew as a child if she had those pictures. She knew who Amy was.
Mm-hmm. So really, throughout this whole thing, River should have, yeah, as Brooke mentioned, River should have known this is, I used to live here. Mm-hmm. Well, she wasn't actually in the orphanage. She does.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, she must have been like, yeah, this is where I used to live. Yeah.
Glad I'm not here anymore.
Seems so much smaller than I remember. Like, yeah, when she sees a NASA suit, a space suit, does she go, ooh, I used to live in one of those?
Well, there is a scene, and this is getting into what we're going to be talking about in our next episode a little bit. It's kind of explained a little bit why River doesn't remember some of that. So, you know, we can talk about that now, or we could wait till next time when we do the Wedding of River Song, because he does talk about why, you know, certain things she does remember and not remember. Because you would think, you know.
Oh, that's right. He does.
Yeah, because you would think, you know, hey, I'm shooting at that astronaut, but I purposely got to miss it because that's me, you know. Mm-hmm. You know.
Right.
So, but they do talk about that a little bit.
That's true. And isn't it like her, like, I thought it was really cool that an idea, like, she's like, we have to, like, dispose of the body because, like, Time Lord body is, like, on the open market, like, that's worth a lot. So, but really she's doing it to hide the fact that it's not him, right?
Right.
We find out later.
Well, that's the impression I got, that she's trying to hide it. Mm-hmm.
Well, but, you know, she sells it just as much as, well, I mean, really the one who sells it the most is Karen. Like, you know, I mean, I think, Mary, you were saying that, you know, with even it's kind of a dopey Dr. Death or whatever. But, man, Karen sells the hell out.
She does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she really does. I have to give her a lot of props for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I found myself welling up just because watching her, you know, like, I don't really think he's dead. I know he's not dead because I've seen this before. But damn, Karen, you're like bringing me to the edge.
Yeah, but she doesn't know.
Right.
There are so many times I was sitting here and I was like, I was on the computer and I had my iPad playing it and just listening to it and kind of going back and forth and looking at it. Like, I would kind of well up with tears. I'm like, what is this? It's been too long since I've watched Doctor Who and now I'm like tearing up over everything.
Now, when you first saw it, I wonder, I mean, because you had no context, did Karen's performance alone, like make you care about the doctor?
I remember thinking, what is happening? Like, I choose to watch this and he dies, but I'm gonna go with it. I know something's gonna happen because the show doesn't end.
Right. Fair enough.
But I know, because I went backwards, it made everything else more emotional, I think, whenever I went backwards with River's story anyway. Because I think if I had watched it the other way, I would have just been like, okay, she seems to know him. Whatever, that's sad. She's gonna, you know, sacrifice herself. That's sad. But because I watched it the other way, I was bawling once I finally got to Silence of the Library.
Nope, totally understand that. All right, let's start wrapping this up. Any final thoughts before we go ahead and rate? Wow. I expected one final thought at least.
River Song is awesome.
There we go.
I don't even think, do I really need to say that out loud? At this point with my history, do I even really need to say that out loud? Not only is River Song awesome, Alex Kingston is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's so awesome. I'm so glad I got to meet her. It took forever. We had a group of people, of River Sisters, as we call ourselves, and it was dwindling down to who hadn't met her. And finally, it was me and one other girl, and I had somehow missed out on seeing her four separate occasions, and finally got to meet her at Dragon Con last year.
Alex was pretty tough for a while. The first convention that I went to meet her, Chicago TARDIS, she bailed.
Yep.
And I was there. Then there was a few other instances where, she had to cancel because that woman works a lot. So
I went to Dallas.
It's hard to track down.
I went to Dallas and she canceled the day before and we'd already gone to Dallas, but my husband at the time, my ex-husband, he had lived in Dallas a long time. So we were going and seeing his friends and stuff. That was an excuse for me to go to the con and meet Alex. And then he could go back and see his friends because he didn't get to go very often. she wasn't there. There was another place that I know that she was, that they were making a deal with her and then it fell through, but I had known about it because I was talking to somebody about it. And then somewhere else I was supposed to go. Oh, the one
Dragon
year,
Con,
the year
maybe,
Dragon
right?
Con. Yeah. Yep. And I ended up just not going at all. Cause it wasn't worth it for me to deal with everything else. When she didn't go. So that was pretty sad.
I can totally understand that. All right.
She was a delight.
Let's go ahead and rate this one. 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. All right, Brooke, you got to go first.
I know we talked about that there's problems with this, but I think because these were my first two episodes, my first real Doctor Who story that got me into this and got me into cosplaying River Song, I have to give it 5.
Fair enough.
It's almost sad if I don't. because I still really, really enjoy this story of these two episodes. And I think everybody's, regardless of any sort of maybe plot holes or anything, everybody acts really well. The cinematography is great. There's, even when they're obviously on the soundstage, it's supposed to be like underground in Florida or whatever, it all still looks neat, and the silence are scary and all of that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. Okay. Mikey.
I am going to give it a two-parter. I think I'm going to have to give it a 4.5. I was debating whether it was going to be a 4 or I couldn't give it a full out 5, but it's Alex Kingston. So boom.
Oh yeah.
4.5. Right. So, it's solid. Yeah, that's crazy. And I know that, I think for all of us, there's so much in here that's going on, and it's really crazy that we think maybe it's not. Brooke, you surprised me, because I would not pick this really as a great first timer, like debut story to watch. But the fact that, it hooked you, I mean, what do I know, right? Right. I think it works on that level too, and it's good to hear that it does.
People ask me where to start, and I'm like, don't ask me where to start, because I just did it the completely wrong way.
Wow. Gotcha. All right, Mary.
I think I'm also going to have to give it a 4.5. It doesn't quite make a 5 for me because of there's some clunky storytelling at times. But it's still, they're two wonderful episodes. They really hold up. And I want to give a shout out to Toby Haynes, who was the director. Yeah. He also directed Pandora Opens and The Big Bang and Christmas Carol and even Sherlock, Reichenbach Fall. And he's just an amazing director. And he did such a beautiful job with this, with the shots, with the feeling of the episode, and the way he doesn't let it get too convoluted. And they're two really solid episodes, and some of the best interaction between Alex Kingston and Matt Smith. I mean, they are having a ball here, and so are we. And I would highly recommend people to go back and watch this one, because I think you're going to have a lot of fun. So I think it definitely merits a 4.5.
Nope, totally think so too. And damn it, I'm going to have to agree with you all. Again, I'm going to do 4.5 also. There's just the inconsistencies pull it down from a 5 for me. There's just like so many like, huh? And, but there's so much good in this and so much fun. And, damn it, I want a Star Trek mask, as Joey said. it was just awesome. There's just so much good in this, and I would like to talk about the bad guys in this, but I just can't remember them at all. So so it was just a lot of fun, and I was really glad to see it, and this was the start of a great season. It really was. The pirate story was the next one after this, and then it just keeps on taking off from there. It's just awesome. So, a lot of fun, 4.5 out of 5, but we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. And we're going to be talking about River Song again next time. We are going to finish up with our Summer of Song from the Doctor Who series. We are going to be talking about the wedding of River Song next time. So it should be pretty cool. You should stop by and give us a listen. But before we get out of here, let's thank everyone for being here. Mikey, thank you so much, as always.
As always, it's my pleasure.
And Mary?
Thank you so much for having me. Two great episodes to talk about. And if anybody's looking for me, they can find me at maryogle.com or on Etsy at eVisionArts, or I just released two book covers. If you're an author, I have a whole line of book covers on self-pub book covers / eVision Arts.
Yay. And Brooke, thank you so, so much.
Yeah.
You want to promote your podcast?
Well, sure. Yes. You can find me once a month at Fiction Paradox. We're at Fiction Paradox on Twitter and on Facebook. Also, if I can plug my Etsy, can I do that?
Of course you can.
Okay. I make jewelry and art under the name Fleur de Lis because I live in Louisville and our thing is a Fleur de Lis. So Fleur de Lis. And so me and my best friend do that, and you'll see us around at cons in just strange areas. We've been to Florida and in the South, usually. Florida, Kentucky, Tennessee, you know, that kind of thing. Georgia.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you so much. You made it through your first one, and you're always welcome back.
Thanks. I had a lot of fun. I'm glad that I got to do these since they were my first real episodes.
It's pretty awesome. Of course, you could help support the network by just listening to us, by subscribing to us at home. And, you know, we're up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, wherever fine podcasts are found. And, you know, we have a Twitter account. We have, you know, all these different Facebook stuff. Social media is our way of life. And thank goodness for Mike Gordon, because he's in charge of that now. So it's pretty awesome. So definitely check us out. We definitely would appreciate it. Of course, we've mentioned multiple times the Patreon over the weeks. We just don't want to hammer it. We want to thunder it into your head. Yep, that's it. Thunder it in. So definitely help support us with the Patreon. And of course, Dragon Con is getting closer and closer. So we will see you there. But before that, we'll be back next time on the Earth Station Who podcast. Talk to you then. Peace. And we're done.
Yay.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the T Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.